Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Patrick Roberts. Jimmy goal was better. She's coming against that to it. Big shot to it. Bellingham did. But the goal is ruled out for offside. Pritchard with a free kick. And a goal went to the end. Dan Ballard making contact. Hands ultimately in the far. The play has been waved on. And the chance here now for Sunderland.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back after Sunderland's 2-1 win over West Brom in the Championship. No manager, but we still managed to get two goals and win a game of football, which shows that life does indeed go on without Tony Mowbray. And joining me to talk all about it is Chris. Hiya, mate.
Hello, Gavin. Yes, it's a lot has happened since, felt like a lot's happened since I last did a pod, and it feels like it's been an age since I last did a pod after we won, so looking forward to this.
Yeah, well, I'm feeling pretty chipper today, actually, because, you know, going into the game, I had very low expectations, and I was actually expecting to lose. I think even, you know, before Tony Mowbray was sacked, my confidence was on the floor with regards to this game. I just wasn't looking forward to it for whatever reason. I'd kind of maybe looked at the league table, seen West Brom doing pretty well, thinking about just the fact that we'd stopped scoring goals and all these other things and just didn't have any real confidence. But what we saw was an improved performance where the lads got back to basics in many ways. Mike Dodds had set them up in a way which I think is needed to have been done for weeks and weeks. I've mentioned it a few times on the pod recently about just letting fullbacks be fullbacks and letting centre-halves be centre-halves and not getting too complicated and, you know, having like Hume coming inside and playing like a third centre-half and then playing like a defensive midfielder. Wingers releasing the ball quicker. We had passes going up to Job more directly than we would normally do. So obviously Job led the line, and we had particularly Oshish. Luke O'Neill did it quite a bit too. Just looking for him over the top earlier, which we never really do. So all these things really are just things that I think a lot of people had seen from afar and thought, why aren't we doing more of that? And Tony Mowbray leaves and all of a sudden we realise that's how we should be playing. But it was good to watch, and I actually really enjoyed the performance. It wasn't your typical deflated, disappointing performance after a manager's been sacked. And when we did the Twitter space on Friday night, I said I was worried about this because I didn't know whether the players might be deflated, like I've just said, because, you know, I'm sure that Tony Mowbray was very popular with the majority of the players, not all of them, but with the majority of them. And I wasn't sure whether that would be playing on their mind and that maybe it affected the preparations. But to me, it just felt like that they've got on with it. And Mike Dodds has probably had a very easy job this week in just sort of working with the players and getting them ready for it. So to me, I think, you know, it was a good performance. And, you know, that's a brilliant win. That's a brilliant win because not many teams will beat West Brom this season. They'll lose their fair share, but I think they're a difficult team. There was parts of the first half where they looked really good up front and out wide. So I think that's a brilliant win, a brilliant 3 points, and a great way to sort of respond to what had been a pretty hectic week.
Yeah. I mean, all of that. I mean, you saying that you were nervous about this game. You know, we were talking before kickoff, and it was a role reversal with us two. where you were like, where you were like, oh, I'm worried about this one. And I was kind of adamant that we were going to win it. I just had a feeling that the players needed, I don't know, it felt like since the last international break, the players needed a different voice. It was just looking a little bit stale.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we'd kind of run out of ideas a little bit. And look, I mean, you know, it was a run of, I think it was, I'm going off the top of my head, but I think it was like 2 wins in 9 or something like that beforehand.
Yeah,
and,
it was.
I mean, and that's not disastrous if you look back at last season. We had, I think Tony Mowbray had 2 similar runs like that. He had one in, when he first took over after the Rotherham game, I think he won 1 in 9 or 1 in 10. And then later on in kind of the final third of the season, he went on a run of something similar, like 2 in 9. So it wasn't kind of something we haven't seen from this team. And we've always talked about the age and that inconsistency is kind of expected. So, yeah. So, I mean, look, at some point he might have getting it right. Who knows? But at the same time, and a quick plug for this week's editorial is kind of goes along these lines where, you know, we're talking about that we didn't need drastic changes. And it seemed like, again, after the international break, Tony Mowbray was chopping and changing, not just with personnel. Like, his team selections were all over the shop. And when a manager gets like that, you almost smell the end coming. That a manager doesn't know his best team. He doesn't know how he wants us to play. The patterns of play go out the window. The players look like they've run out of ideas. And you've almost got to separate a little bit the man from the manager. As a man, you're desperate for Tony Mowbray to do well at the club, a bit like going back to Martin O'Neill and Malcolm Crosby and people like that, who you think are brilliant people, and you're desperate for them to do well. And as a manager as well, the way he kind of picked us up last season and he was that steady pair of hands, brilliant, you know, great fella, love the fella. I don't think a Sunderland fan can say a bad word about Tony Mowbray, but the team looked like they needed a new voice. And all the evidence for me, you hit on a lot of it, that all the evidence was in this game, that we didn't need drastic changes. It was those little tweaks, and it was those little, like, you know, Trey Hume getting on the outside of Patrick Roberts, because how often in recent weeks, again, especially since that last international break and the 3 games before West Brom, where Patrick Roberts got the ball and he was all alone, there was nowhere one within 20 yards of him. And you look at the success of Patrick Roberts last season, and how much of that was down to Ahmad standing 10, 15 yards away from him all the time, asking for the ball? Patrick Roberts needs a foil. He's not going to take 3 or 4 players on. Well, sometimes he does, don't get us wrong, but he's not going to do that every time. And when he's isolated like that, Trey Hume bombing on down the outside just gives him that extra yard where he takes a player away and Patrick Roberts can then do something. He's got a bit of breathing space. Yeah. Same on the other side. You called it before the game when we were talking. Fullbacks just giving Jack Clark and Patrick Roberts a foil. I mean, I go back to Alan Johnson being a hell of a player, but how much did Mickey Gray make him by making that run down the left-hand side years ago? I mean, you know, he needed that, because otherwise he'd been outnumbered and he couldn't do anything. It's been the same with Jack Clark and Patrick Roberts in recent weeks. And that was just a small tweak. The other one, as you've called it, was just being more direct, not just pumping the ball forward, but you saw we got back to what we were good at the beginning of last season and certain times in last season, where people in the back four, when they had the ball, especially Luke O'Neill, was reminded of basically one of the main reasons he's got that place at centre-half, that he zips the ball into people, but he sometimes misses the midfield out and zips the ball into like Job or whoever's in that most forward position. So we get 30 yards up the pitch quickly, and that's our starting point. So it's just the whole move gets quicker. And just generally breaking quicker as well. Just knowing that we've got that impetus to kind of get forward and not take too much time on the ball, which has been, again, the problem in recent weeks, because like I said, it just felt like we'd run out of ideas. So as you said, you called it going back to what we know we can do well. And, you know, we'll say it time and time again. We've said it, God knows for how long. But this team can beat any side in this division when they're on their game. They just need to be reminded of, you know, how to do it and how good they are. And I kind of felt like we were going to have that performance against West Brom. And whether it was a reaction or, like I said, just a bit of freshness, it was all good to see. And it's all going back to exactly what this team can do well.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the fact that Mike Dodds just had a tactical game plan, which was pretty evident. Like, I could see when he was making changes and why he was making changes during the game to the way we were playing. First half, Huggins and Hume played in, Hume was left back, Huggins was right back. They come out after half time, that maybe wasn't working so well in the swap round. And then as the game went on and we were 2-0 up, he changed the system entirely. Jack Clark, there was a moment towards the end of the game where Jack Clark literally refused to come out of the left back position when we were trying to hold the ball up in the top left hand corner of the pitch. And it was Pritchard and Dan Neal, I think, who were out there playing up the left hand side together. Clark was 20 yards deeper playing as a left back, and he made a couple of subs where you could see what he was trying to do. So it was just, I feel like that sounds like I'm being disrespectful to Tony Mowbray a little bit, but I don't think we saw that enough from him. You know, we lamented on various occasions the way he would just chuck a load of subs onto the pitch and it made no sense. In recent weeks, it was more like, you know, bringing on a bunch of number 10s and flooding the middle of the pitch, when flooding the middle of the pitch hadn't been working for us and it never changed the games. Whereas with Mike Dodds, we could see what he was trying to do and it made sense. Like, you know, you go 2-0 up against a good team and you should try and, you know, slow the game down, which we did. We were a bit more defensively disciplined. Irritatingly, we conceded a goal during that point, which
I was going to say,
makes me sound a bit daft. But I think as a team, we actually were more defensively disciplined. And when the scoreboard went up and there was 6 minutes added on, we had a game plan to manage it out. You could see the lads not doing certain things and doing other things. You know, a lot of it was trying to keep the ball out wide and just not letting West Brom have it. Things like that, those are things that we haven't done enough under Mowbray. But, you know, I just think it was a really, really good performance. And I think he has to take a lot of that credit, doesn't he? I mean, obviously Tony Mowbray deserves credit generally for the way this team plays football. But I just think that, you know, he put a lot of pressure on himself this week, Mike Dodds as well, talking in the press, talking about how he felt like he needed to show he was a better coach than he did the first time he was caretaker. And that's clearly played on his mind ever since. I mean, and we were in on it too as well, to be fair. We all absolutely slated him during that sort of spell when he was in caretaker charge, because it didn't look like they didn't know what they're doing. And we lost two games against teams we should have been beaten. And, you know, that's obviously played on his mind. It's been nearly 2 years, but, you know, this time around he's had a chance to show what he can actually do. And, you know, so he put a lot of pressure on himself this week to get it right, and he nailed it. And he looked really relieved after the game when he was talking. You know, he looked like the happiest man on earth, because everything that the little tweaks he'd made, they all worked. We got the 3 points. I think it gives, if we do have a new manager in the next few days, you know, winning this game is really important, because me and you have talked about it, the run we're about to embark on, and me and Martin talked about it last week. We've got a difficult run coming up. December's difficult, and then you start January off with a game against Newcastle. So we have to pick up points where we can, because we are going to drop them this month. So to win a game which I don't think most people would have expected us to win is pleasing, because it gets us right back in the mix. It gets us right back in there. I mean, we're now back to 6th in the table. And I know it's so tight. You know, we lose another game and you could go down as far as 13th looking at this. You know, goal difference aside, there's only 3 points separating us and Norwich in 13th place, which is how tight it is. And then just below them, you've got like Bristol City on 26. And so I know it's tight, but we have to, that's another reason why we just, and it sounds obvious and daft to say, but we just have to keep winning games, because this league is very, very tight. And I think, you know, if we had went on another little run where we maybe lose 2 or 3, you're starting to look at the bottom end of the table and worrying a little bit. And I don't think we're as bad as the teams down the bottom end, but we've dropped points to teams down the bottom end. And if we get dragged into a dogfight, we might struggle. We are much more comfortable at this end of the table looking up, because we've got the team capable of putting on performances like we did at the weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, talking about Dodds, I completely agree with everything you said. You know, it was obvious during the game, the tweaks he put in and the little changes he asked people to make in terms of how they were playing and how we set up. And it was nothing major, but you could tell that he'd done something, that he'd had an impact. But, you know, the other place where you have to give credit, because again, going back to the character that Tony Mowbray is, I think, like I said, as a fan base, and it's a really strange thing, because, you know, I've supported the lads for probably far too many years, that when you talk about managerial changes, more often than not, you're absolutely over the moon that a manager's gone. And this wasn't the case when Mowbray went. I mean, I might not have been gutted, don't get us wrong, but at the same time, there was a bit of sadness about it because of the type of fellow Tony Mowbray was. And if we're feeling that, even knowing that we're on a bad run and we might need a new voice, those players, knowing the type of character that Tony Mowbray is, as you said, there's going to be a ton of those players who, you know, almost see Tony Mowbray as this calming influence who came in after Alex Neil, who seemed to be the complete opposite in character, where he put his arm around their shoulder. A lot of these, you know, you're talking 18, 19, 20-year-old lads who've had Tony Mowbray as a manager for, was it 12, 18 months or whatever it's been? I can't even remember how long it's been now. But for that period, growing up, you know, even if it's for a year in their development, he's a big influence. And if they like him, then it's going to have a massive effect. And for those lads to come out and listen to what they've been told at their point in their career and make those changes, you know, and focus on the game, a tough game against a good West Brom side, you've got to give a lot of credit to those players, because there was some, and when we get into the game, we'll talk about individual performances, because you could name them all over the pitch. But again, I think your worries before the game were that the change was going to really impact some of those young lads, where they might think, oh, you know, either that they feel bad because they were part of the cause why they thought a good man had lost his job, or that it just affected them that they've lost this influence. So you've got to give all those players credit of not only focusing on, like I said, beating a good West Brom side, but also taking on board the changes that they need to make, because it would have been very easy for them to go back to just, you know, sticking with what they know and making the same mistakes as we'd made in recent weeks. So yeah, look, Dodds gets a lot of credit. Fantastic. You know, you could tell, as you said, he put himself under pressure. He didn't like what happened last time. And he said a few times that the situation back in League One, he didn't know the players and he didn't know the changes that need to be made. And this time it seemed like because he came in and make those decisions straight away, it seemed like he'd either been trying to make these changes behind the scenes without much luck, or he wasn't able to voice them, because he clearly knew what changes needed to be made, because he kind of made those little changes that we've been talking about for weeks and weeks, saying, why aren't we doing this little change and that little change? And instead of making, you know, like I said, even fullbacks overlap and getting the ball forward quicker, we've been changing the starting 11 and they've been doing the same thing. So yeah, I mean, look, Dodds along with the players, you know, they deserve a lot of credit. And we'll get into the game first before we finish up as well. We'll talk about Dodds' post-match comments, because I thought those were really interesting as well.
They were really interesting, because he was at pains to point out yeah. how great the recruitment's been, which was interesting, because obviously that was a big reason why Tony Mowbray was clearly fired, because he voiced his opinions on the kind of player we'd been signing. And he came out and he made a point to say, I think the recruitment of these players has been fantastic. We brought in some brilliant players, brilliant people. He's also talked about how much he's loved working for Tony Mowbray and how much he really respects him and all that. Now he's a great guy and everything. But you're allowed to disagree on things. And, you know, I've said this, that when it comes to recruiting the next manager, they have to be totally on board with the way we work. And Tony Mowbray wasn't, which is why he wasn't the right man for the job. Ultimately, you know, he would still have a job if he was on board with everything fully. But at the same time, your coaches need to be on board too. They've all got to believe, you know, think of it a bit like a religion or a cult. Like, everybody in the club has to be 100% on board with everything we're trying to do. Otherwise, those dissenting voices will cause issues. And, you know, Mike Dodds isn't going anywhere. He's, you know, the way we work now, we've brought in coaches based on the profile and the things that they stand for and they bring, so that when we do fire a head coach, that part is interchangeable and the coaching team around them largely stays the same. So, you know, Mike Dodds is a big influence at the club at the minute. He's got, I think the players respect him clearly, and, you know, he's a big presence about the place. And he, this even when I've seen his sort of the behind the scenes interactions he's had with the players and stuff at the training ground and videos and things. You know, he clearly gets along with the players. But it's really important that somebody that influential, that's in the building every day, it's important that they are reinforcing what we stand for. And also really basically saying to the players, like, ignore the noise because I think you're all great players and we all know why you're here. I think it's really, really important that he came out and said what he did. I don't think that's disrespectful to Tony Mowbray. I just think that given the whole conversation around sacking Mowbray this week has been around particularly the strikers that we've signed, I just thought it was important that he came out and basically reminded everybody what we stand for, ultimately, because it is important.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, while we're on the subject, look, you know, for me, Tony Mowbray talked himself out of the job, basically. He knew what he signed up for, and the frustration got the better of him. He thinks this team isn't too far away from challenging for the top two or whatever and winning games week in, week out, and he hinted that basically a change of direction of what the club's doing is required in January. And once you do that publicly, I mean, do it behind the scenes. You know, talk to them behind the scenes and say, do you fancy doing this? And if not, fair enough. You can decide if you don't want to carry on with doing that. But don't come out publicly and say, you know, this is wrong and the club aren't doing it in the right way and you want us to change direction, because that's not how it's going to work. And as soon as he even hinted that he wasn't up for that, I mean, that's it. That's the end, basically. And the club, you can't have someone at the top who disagrees with where the club are going or the direction they want to do and the strategy they want to take. Again, another plug for the editorial. I've stuck that all in this week's editorial, because you can't have it. You can't, you know, the club is, you know, you talked about there that the club's got to be going in one direction. Whoever comes in next is going to be clear that they are the next phase in that process, you know, and, you know, we had Lee Johnson to start, get the ball rolling with the young lads, get a style of play. Then we needed a bit of discipline, so we got Alex Neil. Then we needed a steady pair of hands. That was Tony Mowbray. And now we need, well, I think that the direction seems to be that we're going to be looking for a technical coach who can take these young players to the next level. That's where I think the club want to go. But it's this process is going to be in stages, and it's going to require different people for different stages. I mean, like I said, how far, you know, whatever technical coach we bring in can take these players, you know, whether we need a new one for the Premier League stage and all this sort of stuff. So the fact is that, you know, we had 10 years in the Premier League where we were chopping and changing managers, who every manager changed the club's direction. And each time we were left with a load of players who were the last manager's strategy and way of playing. And we had to keep changing the whole squad every time. Now we're in a place where a coach can leave and it doesn't impact how the club are moving forward, because the club have got a plan set in stone. It makes no difference. It's just how the coach coaches those players and how he picks those players and how he puts them on the pitch. And that's it. Hmm. But the club doesn't change. And I mean, it's ideal, because we now know we've just changed manager, and as fans, we know that the club is still going to do the same thing, because it's worked and it's working. We've moved forward in the last 2 years completely beyond where we probably imagined when we were sitting eighth or ninth in League One. They keep moving forward year on year, and now a change of coach doesn't impact that. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see who comes in next. But anyway, like I said, with Dodds' post-match comments, it was interesting that straight away he came out and he was like, yep, no, club direction's brilliant. Recruitment's brilliant. It was like, you know, the last fella had been taught out of a job because he said it was crap. So straight away, I mean, but that wasn't even the question, but he managed to get that comment in.
Give me the job.
Yeah, it had, but the thing is, the way, when he said it, it had no relation to the comments. It was like, oh yeah, good result. Oh yeah, recruitment's brilliant, isn't it? It was like, well,
he'd love that job, wouldn't he? Like, Dodds, yeah. Let's be honest. He'd absolutely love it.
Well, yeah, but it's perfect.
Stranger things have happened.
But the way we've set up, it's perfect for a coach rather than, you know, so, I mean, you know, well, we'll see. But I think his background at the minute, I mean, I prefer him just to be a coach, because I think he's a cracking coach. And again, it's another, the way the club works, that coaches can just stay on and it doesn't make that much of a difference. But so that was interesting. I did have a chuckle when he came out with that.
Yeah. Well, the game, then, let's whiz through it. Yes. So I'll be honest, don't think he made any massive changes with the team. Although going with Job up front was interesting, mainly because I don't know, someone highlighted it, but I'd read, I think it was a quote from Jude Bellingham during the week, where he'd said his brother was a thoroughbred striker like his dad. His dad obviously had a decent non-league career, and it was, I don't know, just it was interesting that I read that quote, and then on the Saturday he's playing up front. But Job played very well up front for me. I think he looks like a centre forward at times. I quite like that he can sort of play virtually any role through the middle. You know, he can play defensive midfield, central midfield, attack midfield as a striker, and he doesn't look fazed by it. Like you don't look at him and think that's an 18-year-old kid playing like his third ever professional game as a striker or whatever. I thought he did all the basics very well. He pressed very well. He got in between the defenders and won through balls and headers. He held it up. He scored a goal, which we'll get onto, which there was nothing wrong with. But that was him anticipating and gambling like a striker should. I think we've said it a few times over the season, actually, that we think he's got a lot of the instincts that you expect from a centre forward in his game. Long term, I don't know if he's actually the perfect option up there, but it's just interesting that for this particular game and for this game plan that Mike Dodds felt that he was the best option over all of the other strikers. I know Roussin's been touch and go for this game, and maybe he'll play on Tuesday. I don't know, but I think if Roussin had been fit in the last couple of weeks, he would have started the last handful of games. Maybe it was just one of those, like a stopgap type thing. But the rest of the team kind of picked itself, really. You know, you had Heumann Huggins at fullback, which the only thing there is which one plays left back and which one plays right back normally. And they changed through the game, as I mentioned before. 09 and Ballard played at centre half, and I thought had a good game. Patterson didn't have a great deal to do actually during the game, so that was good for him. Pierre Ekwall was back in the midfield. Adilo Sheesh started as the number 10. We had obviously Robertson Clark out wide, so it was a pretty straightforward pick, other than who played up front, really, wasn't it? And I think there's going to be calls coming away from the game for Alex Pritchard to start, but I don't think anybody did, you know, themselves any disservice really in that attack. I think everybody played half decent at least, but you know, Pritchard coming on and stealing the show a bit might mean that he gets a start on Tuesday. I don't know, but in terms of the team selection, I think it was straightforward enough, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, and I thought what was interesting, because I mean, again, people have to believe me, and again, I'll ask for your backup, but I did say that I thought, because of Dodd's relationship with Joe Bellingham, that I did think he'd start with Joe Bellingham up front. So I kind of had that feeling that we were going to set up like that. The interesting thing for me was if you watch the full match back again, especially in that first half with Oshish and Job, a lot of the time when you saw us line up, it almost looked like a 4-4-2. Oshish and Job were kind of just almost like two front men. It wasn't one behind the other, where they weren't kind of sitting as a number 10 and a number 9 up front. They were both almost playing just as two strikers to split their defenders when they were in possession, almost as a ploy for our press as much as anything else. But yeah, so it was interesting how far Oshish played up the pitch. It was interesting as well, I mean, the fact that, whether it's the Dodds effect as well, but Job played a full 90 minutes, which actually I don't think off the top of my head he's done that much. And to be fair, I was actually calling for him to come off with 20 minutes to go, because I thought he looked absolutely knackered. And Oshish got very quiet as well before he came off, kind of around the hour mark. But they did have good games, and they did have some nice touches. But yeah, I mean, that was the only real tweak in terms of how we set up, like formation wise, that I kind of noticed that it seemed at times we were almost playing with two up front. And yeah, it was. And the other thing as well, in case I don't mention it, it was good to see a solid performance by Ekwa, because he needed that.
Yeah, I saw a few people have mentioned they didn't think he played well, but I thought he had a canny game. I thought first half he wasn't as great. He was sort of a bit wishy-washy, but second half I thought he was excellent. And there was a moment in the game where he saved us, really, because Huggins had been done over the top. And if he hadn't have been there and come across to win the ball, they would have definitely scored, I think. So
Yeah, it wasn't up there with kind of the performance he was putting in earlier the season, but it was much better than it has been in recent weeks. Yeah. So it was just good to see.
Yeah, yeah. So the first half, I thought it was better than Mike Dodd said it was. He wasn't impressed at all. I thought, you know, he sort of said after the game he felt like we didn't play particularly well first half. I noticed their manager had said that he felt they had a good first half too. But I thought we did okay first half. I wasn't offended by the performance whatsoever. I thought we did okay. I've got to come to it because it's the big talking point, but we had a decent spell of pressure and then score a perfectly fine goal and it's chalked off for offside. Everybody in the ground could tell that was not offside. Nobody around me stood and went, oh shit, he's offside or whatever. You know what I mean? It was clearly onside. None of their players appeal for an offside. If you watch the replay back on Sky, their reaction tells its own story because it's you watch the reaction to defenders whenever a team concedes a goal and they sort of like throw their arms up in the air, they look to the ground and they sort of trudge back to the halfway line. And that's exactly what West Brom did. It wasn't like it felt like the linesman needed to put his flag up. Everybody could see that he's onside, apart from the linesman, apparently. I mean, we don't want to sit and do another 20 minutes on how shit all the officials are. We know they are. But that's so blatant. That is so blatant. I couldn't get my head around it at the time. I still can't. I'm looking at it again. I'm like, has someone maybe gotten his line of sight? He's looking right at it. I think there's... Only thing I can think is his concentration wasn't there. And he was totally distracted by maybe Pat Roberts, who was in an offside position, but wasn't involved in any way in the goal. That's the only thing I can think. I mean, obviously it's an error from the goalkeeper too. So maybe watching it, he's looked at it and it's, you know, he's maybe concentrating on the wrong thing. But effectively what I'm saying here is that the linesman's done a really poor job. So, you know, I'm not making excuses for the guy. It was shit, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
For a decision like that in the second tier of English football, because how big the championship is, and if you think what it's worth, you know, if you think at the end of the season what the prize is actually worth, you're talking hundreds of millions of pounds. And if it's based on missing out on, you know, by 2 points or a point, and you get decisions like that, I mean, completely amateur decisions like that. And I mean, like I said, it wasn't even close. I mean, it was talking 2 or 3 yards, which in the grand scheme of things, for linesmen at that level, 2 or 3 yards is not close. It's not, you know, like linesmen, you see some fantastic decisions by linesmen at the top level, as much as we slate them, that sometimes they get ones that are marginal and you go, God, that was a good decision. I would have never have spotted that. But I mean, this was just kind of just completely amateur. I mean, Andy Hinchcliffe said at one point, he said his view might have been blocked by the West Brom defender. I was like, well, hang on. If it's blocked and he can't see a Sunderland player, then he's onside. It's like just a ridiculous comment. You're kind of giving him excuses, saying he might have been distracted by Patrick Roberts, but that's his job, to see Patrick Roberts there, know that he's not interfering with play.
Steady on Roy Keane. That's his job, is it?
But yeah, but you're giving him an excuse, saying he was... I mean, you can't be distracted by players who aren't... You know, that's what you've got to do. You look along the line and you know he's got nothing to do with it. Joe Bellingham was behind two big defenders, so he couldn't even see if Joe Bellingham was offside. And what I think is, you kind of touched on a little bit, that he's just guessed that Joe Bellingham was so quick to the ball after the goalkeeper spilled it that he has to be offside, but he didn't see him offside. He's just went, oh, he has to be offside, because otherwise he wouldn't have been able to get to the ball so quick. So he's just completely guessed at it, threw up his flag. And what annoys me is when the camera goes on him and he's got this smug look on his face as if, oh yeah, I'm spot on. And, you know, I'd love it if at half time or something like that, someone just kind of points out, do you know how wrong you got that decision? you know how crap your performance was in that first half. Like one of his assessors go, oh, come on, pick it up. Because it annoys me that, you know, these decisions are just going to go by the wayside. Nothing's going to happen. And it's just annoying that these people get away with making decisions like that. And, you know, if we'd gone on to lose that game, just, I mean, what, 13 minutes in, and you know how early goals are for us. Like, it gets our tails up and we run away with it. And it's just annoying that people like that just, you know, can't do their jobs properly, basically.
well, there were a bunch of decisions throughout the game that were horrendously wrong. I mean, I think Dan Ballard was lucky to be on the pitch because yeah. At the time, I didn't actually think anything of it at the time. I don't think many people in the ground did, to be honest.
You put in the chat right at the time, you said, I can't believe he's been booked for that.
Well, in the ground, I mean, to be fair, I was a way away from it. But in the ground, like, I don't think, I don't know whether it just didn't look as bad in real time in the ground, because even when Maggio was getting carried off, people were booing him as if he dived or maybe went down a bit soft. Honest, they did. I don't know whether just in real time, watching it in the ground, maybe it looked like a, like, because it's a bad tackle. Like, I don't know how he's getting away with it. I do know how he's getting away with it.
Terrific.
Because the ref was shite. It was that hairband nonce that we've had a few times in the past. I forget his name. You know, man in his 40s with grey hair and an Alice band. He just, yeah, I knew he was a prick from the minute I seen him, and he was awful again. Yeah, but anyways, yeah. So Dan Ballard, very, very lucky to be on the pitch by the end of the game. As was, I don't know who it was who elbowed Pritchard, but he's like 5 yards from the fourth official, and the linesman's not too far away either. Yeah. That's a bad one. It's a proper on the. Apparently, someone had said after the game, Pritch looked a bit swollen as well from that. It's a proper elbow, Chris. It's a pointed arm in his face.
I'm not completely disagreeing with you. I just think that the one thing to take into account when I kept watching it back is Pritchard's size. That if you look at the way he kind of puts his arm out, that I think for a player who's not as small as Pritchard, that is kind of an arm in someone's chest.
Well, Pritchard, I mean, he's still caught him flush on the chin.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was kind of, yeah. And look, he could have easily been sent off, but I keep thinking about that, thinking, maybe if it was another player, it wouldn't have been so bad.
Possibly. But there we go. It was just one of many decisions. I totally get why West Brom might feel like, you know, they were maybe hard done to because of Ballard not getting sent off. But, you know, their manager coming out after the game and basically, like, going in on the decisions from the referee, I'm thinking, come on. They gave you a leg up by not allowing that perfectly fine goal. Like, it's probably easier to just come out and say, like, nothing, really, because we both had decisions go against us, really. So, you know, but it wasn't a great performance from the officials, you know, let's be honest.
Well, that's it. It was about 5 minutes after the disallowed goal where we had the Roberts penalty shout.
Yeah, do you think it was a penalty? I haven't seen the replay, by the way, but at the time it looked like to me, we were seeing this at the ground, you know, he's already skipped past everybody and got into a decent position, so why would he go down soft? I don't get why he would.
No, well, he's, and I've seen these given, I mean, look, maybe kind of 3 out of 10 referees might have given the penalty because there is contact, but the problem is his last touch of the ball goes too far. It's a bad touch, his last touch. And he's already going down before the contact. Now, if he'd waited a second later and waited for the contact and then went down, I think the referee gives a penalty. But Roberts is waiting for the contact and he can't wait long enough. So he goes down, he starts going down. And I think the referee just thinks, he's gone too early. And the contact hasn't made much difference. So it could have easily been a penalty, but for it, I kind of understand why the referee hasn't given it.
Yeah. The only other moment I can really think off the top of my head from the first half was the when Oshish hit the post, and then it was, I didn't realise, because we didn't get a corner for it, but the keeper made a brilliant save from Jack Clark in the follow-up.
Got a hand to it.
We just thought, bloody hell, Clark's fluff that.
Yeah. But yeah, but Clark still should have buried that. He shouldn't have given the keeper a chance.
I mean, it's a great save, though, because the keeper's in an awkward position to save it, and he does. But yeah, like I say, I don't think we played too badly first half. I know, let's say Mike Dodds maybe wasn't too impressed, but I thought we did okay.
Well, if you look at what we created in the first half, I agree, it was a solid performance, and you've got to remember West Brom are a good side. But yes, okay, we had the disallowed goal. We had Roberts getting into the box and the penalty shout. But apart from that, in that first half, it was solid, but we didn't create enough.
No. But then second half, we were the better team second half by a mile, I thought. And it would have been unfair if we hadn't won the game.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, like I said before, I actually thought individually quite a lot of the attackers played well, but it was the introduction of Pritchard which really changed things. And you know, it's funny when you think about it, because this week there's been quite a lot of talk about not just the striker thing that Mowbray mentioned, but the fact that the expectation at the club is that we give those starts to young players who we need to develop, not the likes of Alex Pritchard. I think everyone was expecting him to leave in the summer. There's probably a high chance he leaves in January, but, you know, he certainly did himself a favour playing like he did, because he came on and he changed the game. He got two assists, maybe trying to prove why they should keep him and give him maybe another deal. Because, look, I like Alex Pritchard. I think last season in the Championship, I thought he was poor. I'll be honest, you know, I think he really missed that natural link-up he had with Ross Stewart in League One, which I thought they really benefited from each other's presence on the pitch. Last season, not having him on the pitch very often meant that Pritchard just wasn't as good. But, like, you know, that's all in the past, I guess. You know, you're looking to now, and that ball for the second goal in particular was just that's Premier League quality play. And if he could do that more often, then, you know, he would be starting every week for us. But certainly did himself plenty of favours in coming on and doing what he did. But the first goal was a great ball in too. I mean, Ballard, it's a fantastic header though. To get the ball on target from that position is fantastic. And the goalkeeper, you know, he's stretching for it, but he gets nowhere near it. It's a great header. I like, we don't score many of them kind of goals, so it's nice when we do.
It's an absolutely fantastic header, and I'm gonna disagree with you slightly on the actual free kick itself, because I don't think the ball in was that great.
We had the same disagreement on the whose goal was it the other week when Roussin flicked it on, and I was like, oh, I thought it was a great move.
Yeah,
and you were like,
No, I think actually he gave Ballard too much to do on this. I think it was a little bit low to the front post. It was, if you look at where Ballard had actually run to make contact with the ball, if you look at how Ballard got to it as well, he had to kind of duck almost. He jumped, but it was so low, he had to get his head down. And then how he managed to get it in from, because if you look at where he made contact from the ball, it's almost on the edge of the six-yard box, like the corner of the six-yard box. It's way out. And I don't know how he got it on target. I mean, it's an unbelievable header, how he managed to get that on target. Because, like I said, I don't think it was the best free kick in the world. I honestly don't. I don't think it was kind of, it wasn't put on a plate or a mat really at all. Again, I don't think there was a huge amount of pace on it as well. But I just think Ballard had everything to do. And I mean, it is, like I said, it's the way he got it on target from where he made contact with it. I still don't know how he managed it, that he did it in a way where it almost shocked the keeper, because I think the keeper was crap at that near post. But the header was so good, and it was in such, he put it in such a position, the keeper, when he realised Ballard had done what he did, just couldn't get to it. But yeah, I mean, what a header. I mean, the ball was dipping a bit too much, and Ballard had to, it's weird because obviously he jumped at first expecting a high ball in, but then he realised he had to get underneath it and direct it backwards and kind of to the side. And yeah, just a fantastic goal. And it's funny as well, because it was probably one of the more difficult chances that we'd had in the game, and we managed to score from it.
Yeah, and then the second goal was, you know, you kind of forget it was a gift in many ways, because their player slips on his arse, and that it's winning the ball back from that situation, which we score from. But it wasn't an easy chance to create, because Pritchard was surrounded. He had four people around him, and he was facing the wrong way, and he managed to, I don't know how he played that pass, but he managed, despite being surrounded with the outside of his right boot, he manages to put it right into the path of Daniel as he's advancing. It's possibly the best pass I've seen all season from any player in the Championship. I thought it was just lush. Like, to be able to do that with that sort of situation, with his body facing the wrong way, oh, what a ball that was. I don't think it's been talked about enough, maybe outside of Sunderland fans, about how great that pass was, because I don't think we've got another player in the team who can do that kind of pass. We've got some fantastic technical players, but that was just, it was awesome. Like, and again, something which I've said a fair bit, and so have you, on these podcasts, when we I know it was from their corner, so naturally we had the ability to break against them. But when we play against teams who actually come at you a bit more, and, you know, even on set pieces, commit people forward and get people in the box because they think they can score from those situations, when we play teams who do that, we've got the players to break and counterattack and score goals. It's just a shame we don't get to do it enough.
There was a couple of things. There was a couple of things about this goal I just absolutely loved. I mean, for a start, I mean, how many times have we talked about us defending corners, and that in the past it's been our weakness, and we look back at the end of last season and kind of we were undone by it defending corners. But you know, time and time again, we've conceded from it. And I mean, if you look at Ballard and Hume off this corner and how they defended it, they just charged at the ball when the ball was played in, and they both just threw themselves at it. And then the ball fell to Ekwa. And again, something that we don't do that often, it was just a bit of no-nonsense from Ekwa, and he just got it clear. He just booted the ball clear, high up into the air. And then after that, the brilliant thing again is that the ball goes up in the air and they've only got two players back, but all the players who charge forward at that point, your likes of Pritchard, Dan Neil as well, they know there's half a chance, because if that player takes one touch that's a yard too far or whatever, then we're on it and we're away. And the players have got the intelligence to know that. And again, he slipped. And then after that, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one that thought when Pritchard got the ball, he screwed this up. What's he doing? He's going in completely the wrong direction. And that's me being a complete idiot, because he knew exactly what he was doing, dragging the players over even 2 or 3 yards to the side Pritchard was running down. And then he just reversed it to give Dan Neil all the room in the world. And by the way, and it was good to see Dan Neil talk about this after. I mean, what a finish. I mean,
oh yeah, gorgeous. Yeah.
I mean, to do that, 7 minutes from time, you're 1-0 up. Basically, the game is almost riding on this, because, you know, then you put yourself, you get that breathing space with, you know, 10 minutes to go. What a finish. And it's good to see Dan Neil doing that, because that's kind of the final piece in his game that he can add to, well, he'll end up being a Premier League player. I just hope it's with us.
Mm.
Yeah, it was just a great goal. But it was great to see us defend a corner and then charge out and make something of it. And it was just a brilliant goal.
Yeah, I love that goal so much. Yeah. Like, I think I put on Twitter, on the Rote Report Twitter, it's the horniest goal we've scored in a while. isn't it? It was a sexy goal. It was just a sexy pass. And then to lift it over the keeper like that, yeah, fantastic goal. Dan Neil scored a few nice goals this season now, hasn't he, when you think about it? You know, so he is adding that to his game. And that natural progression from more defensive midfield player to one who gets forward and gets involved, and you know, that's what's going to make him attractive to bigger clubs, is the look at him, they go, right, okay, well, is he just a technician, is he just a passer? Nah, he's got goals to his game. Yeah. and he can score, and not just tap-ins, you know, flicking it over the goalkeeper. I think that's again, he's chipped the keeper and then sort of, well, that was the first one that I'm thinking of, the goal he scored a couple of months ago. And then this one where he's lifted from a bit further out, it does make him look a more complete player when he scores them kind of goals. The only other thing I really want to talk about from the game is their goal. And it's the only real black mark on the performance for me, because I thought we played so well and we defended so well. I actually think, I mentioned about going back to basics, we defended more basically, and I thought it benefited 09 and Ballard, because we weren't asking them to join the midfield and sort of charge out as much. They were just concentrating on defending, but the goal is really disappointing. I know Thomas Asante, who the goal scorer, he gets between the two centre halves, but Ballard's fully aware of where he is. I've watched it back a few times, and he checks his man several times, like at least 3 or 4 times while the ball's on the wing, but he's still nowhere near him for the goal. And it's not like the guy's like totally bamboozled him with a mad run or turned and just found a bit of space that didn't exist. He's there. He's with him. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if this had been the other way around and it had been Luke O'Nine's man, I think it would be getting highlighted a lot more about that. And, you know, it's not often that we have to highlight poor defending from Dan Ballard, because actually his performance overall was brilliant. You know, the dodgy tackle on Josh Madger aside and this, I thought he actually played really well. But, you know, you do have to mention it, because it was slack. And really, you know, Patterson's going to be pissed off that he didn't finish with a clean sheet. Because I just think if Ballard checks his man and he stays tight to him, he doesn't get that leap, he doesn't win the header, and the ball just goes straight into Patterson's hands and we finish 2-0. It was just, again, like we've we keep saying it's just a stupid goal to concede, because I know they just conceded the second not long before it, but it wasn't like they were piling forward and sort of bombarding the box or anything. It was just I thought it was a really poor goal to concede. So, yeah. You know, if I'm coming away with this with any gripes about the performance, it was just the defending when we conceded the goal wasn't good enough.
Yeah, it was annoying. I mean, for a start, it was 2 minutes after we scored the second, which was just annoying. And it seemed to come out of nothing as well. It wasn't like you said, it wasn't like they were kind of piling everyone forward and desperate to get back into the game. It just kind of came out of nothing. I mean, the first thing I want to mention is a pet hate of ours that we talked about we've talked about it less now than we used to be fair. But I just thought the effort and look, Niall Huggins had a good game. I think he had a really good game and he was pretty solid. But it was a half-hearted effort to stop that ball coming into the box.
Mm.
And if as fullbacks, you chuck yourself at that ball. You stop that. Your job is to stop that ball coming anywhere near the box. And if you just hang a leg out as a fullback and just allow that ball to come in because you rely on other people to get it clear, then you haven't done your job properly. And if you look, the effort, he wasn't tight. He wasn't kind of close enough. He basically allowed that ball to come in the box. And like I said, I'm going to caveat that with I like Niall Huggins and I think he had a really good game. But just in that moment, he just wasn't good enough. And then when the ball came in, yes, you're absolutely right about Ballard. And the fact that he ends up between the two defenders, just like your communication isn't good enough if he ends up between two defenders. And if, you know, one thinks the other's got him and then he loses him or whatever happens, but he just should not win a header between two centre-halves like that. And the other thing, and it's probably a gripe of mine about goalkeepers generally, but if you look where Patterson is when the fella makes contact with the ball, he's behind him. Like, he's almost behind him, kind of waiting for the ball. And for me, you're not anticipating the ball coming over everyone. You're waiting there for the contact. You're in goal waiting for the contact and to be able to save it. And I just, and again, you know, I like Patterson. He's been good this season, but again, just, when I looked at where he was, I just thought his positioning was a bit crap. But who am I to say? I'm not a keeper or anything like that. I have no idea. But yeah, I just thought, just annoying that it, you know, after we scored the second, you thought game over. 2 minutes later, they're back into it. But then after that, I thought we managed them really well. I thought we did really well to, like, talking about game management and all that sort of stuff. I thought we did really well after that, after we conceded the goal. West Brom didn't look like they were going to equalise, other than that little scare with Luke O'Neill.
You have to remind us. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, the penalty decision, well, it didn't get given. What do you think?
I don't think it was a penalty, but only just, I think he put himself in a really awkward position where actually a few referees would have given that and it would have been soft, but I think Luke O'Neill put himself in a position where he could have given that away. He got on
Trey
the
Hume
side.
Wasn't happy mind. He was standing over the lad shouting at him to get up.
Well, Luke O'Neill was.
Yeah, they both were. So I don't know whether they felt he just went down soft trying to get a penalty.
He did. No, he did. Right, he did. But right he did. But the point is, Luke O'Neill put himself in that position because he got on the wrong side.
Yeah.
He allowed him to come on the outside. So yeah, look, the player, the West Brom player, last minute, he has a sniff of a penalty. He's going to go down like that. But what you do is you just don't put yourself in that position.
No. Well, that was the game then. It was a good performance and a good win. Very quickly before we go, we'll mention Leeds, because that's going to be tough, isn't it? We've talked about it a little bit in the last few weeks about how sort of difficult the run we've got in December is, and I think this is the hardest test of them all. But what gives us a little bit of hope is the way we played against West Brom and the fact it's at home. And actually, our home form has turned round this season. We're quite good at home now. And against a team who are going to come at us, I think it might suit us to play. We always look better against teams who play football against us. We might not always win, like we didn't win against Leicester, but we played very well against Leicester because naturally they're going to try and play football against you. And I think it'll be the same with Leeds. What worries me about Leeds is just how tricky that front line is. And I'm really interested. I mean, I'm not saying it's in any way as good, and I'm looking way ahead here, but I'm not saying it's anywhere near as good as Newcastle's forward line, but I would say this is the best front four in the league and probably better than the one that they had in the Premier League last year because they've made a couple of tweaks here and there. You know, so I like to think this is basically a test for us, like a Premier League standard attack against this defence and seeing how they maybe get on. Because I just, you know, Perrault's a great striker. He's a proper goal scorer. I think he got a couple against us last year for Swansea. Dan James is a pace merchant. He's not a technically great footballer, but he's a pace merchant. And, you know, if we leave gaps, he will exploit it. I think they've got, is it Somerville, the other winger? So, you know, they've got a fantastic team. And you look at their bench, they've got Patrick Bamford. They've got Ruta, who I think they broke the transfer record to sign last year, sitting on the bench. Do you know what I mean? So, like I'm going into it with very low expectations, but I actually think as a team performance, I think we'll play well, and we've got the ability to, when we play well, to beat anyone. I just do worry about that attack. So it's a good test for us. It'll show us exactly where we're at, because, you know, Ipswich and Leicester are right up there at the top, but then I think it's Leeds. Leeds are probably the next one down from that, in terms of where things are going to end up. And if they go on a run where they just keep winning and winning and winning, they might even edge into them top two places come the end of the season. So for me, it's like playing a Premier League team, even though it's not. I think it's a good test for us.
Yeah, you're right. I think that top four is done. I think that the top four is going to be the top four, whether it, you know, and it just depends on what order that top four are going to finish in. I think they're going to kind of split from the rest of the pack, and I think there's going to be two playoff places to play for.
They already have, really, haven't they? When you look at it, you sort of, there's a 6-point gap between Southampton and West Brom. So it is basically, but I mean, just as an aside as well, I find it crazy just Ipswich lost twice all season.
Yeah,
I didn't see that coming. A lot of people did, by the way, and I laughed at it. I was like, nah, I can't see that happening. You know, a lot of the EFL pundits and podcasts thought this would happen, and I just don't get it. But fair play to Ipswich, like they've been brilliant. To even, they're 7 points ahead of Leeds, who I've just said are brilliant and are probably, you know, got Premier League standard players, and Ipswich are way ahead of them again. So It just shows how well they've done. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the top four is probably what's going to be in the end of the season.
Yeah. Well, if you go back to our season preview pod with Not the Top 20 podcast, did we do it with them? Anyway, we did a season preview with somebody. Can't remember who it was.
Yeah, you
now.
Did. You done it with George Ellick.
That was it. Yeah, I can't remember yesterday. But yeah, we were talking about Ipswich, so people can go back and listen to how messed up I was then when I said it was never happened. But yeah, that, like I said, I think that top four will be the top four. Looking at Leeds playing away from home, they've won 5 out of their 10, and they've only lost 3 out of 10 away from home so far this season. But I was looking at their last three games away from home, and they looked impressive against Blackburn, and then the game before that they drew at Rotherham, which I think they obviously expected to go to Rotherham and win, because the game before that, they went to Leicester and beat Leicester away from home 1-0. So, yes, look, they looked impressive at Blackburn. They obviously beat Leicester. But that Rotherham result hints at the fact that, you know, that whether it was the way Rotherham just sat on the edge of their box or whatever it is, that, you know, that teams can kind of get at them and kind of stop
them.
They've
also lost to Stoke, by the way, end of October.
That tells you a lot.
As you're saying that, I'm just looking through and, you know, they've lost a few away games this season, actually.
Well, they've lost 3 out of 10, but it just shows that they're capable every so often of, you know, slipping up away from home. And not against sides at the top either. You know, they look like they play better against the sides at the top, if anything, away from home.
And we can sympathise with that. You know, teams do set up, but we know, don't we, teams set up differently against you when you're a good team. They just camp, and it doesn't matter how good your players are. Sometimes you just can't break them down. So it's fair enough. I can totally sympathise and understand why they went to Rotherham and struggled. It'll not be the same kind of game here. You know, we're a very different team to them.
Yeah, but I mean, you talked about their front line, and yes, you know that their front line is impressive and they've got some good players. But you know, looking at their goals scored again away from home, there's plenty of teams who've scored more considering where they are on the table. But actually, their defensive record, I think there's only three sides who've conceded fewer goals away from home. So they don't concede many goals. They've only conceded 11 in 10 games away from home, which actually is good when you look at the rest of the division. So I think, again, look, I think it doesn't matter who it is, whether, you know, Leicester, Ipswich, any of that top four, if they come to the stadium, I'm like, if we turn it on, if we get a goal, if we get ahead, you know, we're more than capable of beating anyone in this division if we do what we do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm just going into it with pretty low expectations, but I feel a lot more relaxed about it anyways, just because we won the West Brom game. I wasn't expecting us to win, and we did. So it does take a little bit of pressure off, and I'm sure the players will play with more freedom. And you know, when they win games, it reminds them of what they're good at. And like I always take notice of what other teams say about us. And even the West Brom manager came out and said that, you know, they struggled with the way we played in that second half. I think all teams in this league are very much aware of how good we are, and Leeds won't take us lightly. You know, I expect them to come and certainly be, you know, well prepared on what we're like. I just look at their team and think it's a good team. So, you know, if we get something in happy days, I'd take a point now. Would you be happy with a point or not? Because I would be. I'd be over the moon. I think if you can say we got 4 points from these two games, that's good, considering who we've played.
Yeah, I mean, on paper I would, but it's one of them at home where it just depends how the game goes. You know, if we're on top and get a point, I'll be gutted. But if Leeds turn it on and we have an off day, I'll be over the moon with a point.
I'm just looking at the bench from the weekend, right? So they went away to Blackburn, right? And the front line was Ruta, Somerville, Perrault, Dan James. They had Glenn Kamara, who was a successful player with Rangers. Ethan Ampadu, who's a Premier League midfield player. I mean, Joe Roden, who's on loan from Tottenham, good player. They've got Sam Byram back, who's having a canny season, I think. But then I look at the bench. Jaden Anthony, who's a good player. Wilfred Nonto, who's a good player. Jed Spence, who's a good player. They had Joe Gellart, who never come on, like, but I don't rate him particularly. But what I'm saying is that the players they brought on, you're looking at them, you're going, bloody hell, I wouldn't mind him in my team. You know, they've got good players on the bench even, so they've got the ability to mix it up and change things if things aren't working. So, yeah, I just think they're a very good team.
And it's a perfect example. We talk about, you know, us finishing the playoffs last season. Look, we're sixth this season, you know, coming up to the halfway mark. And this season, you've basically got, well, you've definitely got three teams in Leicester, Leeds and Southampton on paper with their players that they've got, who are better than a lot of sides in the Premier League. If you look at the bottom of the Premier League, those three sides have got much better players than a lot of teams in the bottom five or six in the Premier League. And Ipswich Town, with the way they're playing, they wouldn't struggle as bad as your Lutons and your Burnleys and all this sort of stuff in the Premier League. So this season, you've got those four at the top who were streets ahead of anybody who were in the Championship last season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a harder league. So, you know, I just look at their team on paper. I think it's very good. So if we can get anything from the game, I'd be over the moon. I'll take a point right now. Absolutely take a point. Anyways, we'll be back after the Leeds game to reconvene and chat and hopefully talk about another win. Maybe Mike Dodds is going to actually get the job if we keep winning games. I said it before, stranger things have happened, of course. But, let's just hope for another good performance and see what happens there against Leeds. Cheers, mate. Thanks for joining us.
No worries.
It's been a hefty one, this one, but we've had lots to talk about.
It always is.
And just to let the listeners peer behind the curtain, even I told Chris we should probably aim for half an hour tonight, and we're way over target. So if you're this far in and you're still listening, well done. And even we're surprised that we're going on this long, but we're a pair of gobshites, aren't we? We can't shut up. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Cheers to the listeners. Make sure you donate to our fundraiser for the Soup Kitchen. The books have gone back on sale. We did periodically sell out, but we've got a reprint. So if you haven't got the book yet, make sure you buy that. All the profits go to the Community Soup Kitchen. Thanks everyone who's already picked up a copy. Thanks everyone who bought a pair of the bespoke Luke 09 socks, which sold out. Also, all profits from those go into the Soup Kitchen. Yeah, let's just make this the best year ever for the fundraiser, because we need to help as many people as possible. And we'll be back after Leeds and we'll catch you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.